Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It's always fun to have these conversations. I always enjoy these conversations. Sometimes, though, we have conversations that we put off for a little while. Maybe we don't want to have those conversations, questions that we don't want to talk about with our aging family members. We're going to talk about those today. We're going to look at how we can have those conversations. What are the questions to ask? We're going to have that conversation here in just a little bit with our friend Sylvia Nissenboim. She's a licensed clinical social worker. We'll have that conversation here in just a little bit. Stick around for great conversation here on Faith and Family. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo, Concordia University, Wisconsin, in the sponsor section. Click on that. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about all the great programs they have to offer, all the good work that they're doing through Concordia University, Wisconsin, including supporting this program. Did you know that worldwide KFUO celebrates 90 years of broadcast ministry this year? Coming up not too far from now, November 3rd marks the kickoff of our 90th celebration. Hope you can join us for the weeks ahead as we celebrate 90 years of God's blessings and broadcast ministry here at Worldwide KFUO. So much more to share about that, and we'll be celebrating it right here on Faith and Family with special guests with topics related to all that we're going to cover in that 90th celebration. Joining me in studio today, Sylvia Nissenboim. She is a licensed clinical social worker and has a presentation coming up, some workshops coming up very soon with Lutheran Senior Services. We'll get to the details about those later on in the program, but I'm so excited to have this opportunity to talk with Sylvia. Sylvia, welcome to Faith and Family. Good to have you in studio today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Now, we'll be talking about the presentations you'll be doing, how to talk about the hard stuff, communicating with aging parents.
Yeah.
We've talked about this topic from time to time here on Faith and Family, and I think it's important for us to address it here on Faith and Family because sometimes when we think about family issues, we think, oh, it's all about parenting, but it's also about taking care of our parents too.
Right, and knowing when to step in and mm-hmm. how to step in and how to bring up topics that are not easily brought up that everybody has an issue with. Yeah.
So we've got some topics to address today, some questions that we're going to get into. And we don't want to get into all of it because we don't have time to get into all of the questions. and we want folks to get to come meet you at these presentations at Lutheran Senior Services and to engage in conversations there as well. But we'll give them a taste of what they'll learn about today. First of all, tell us about your background. What prompted you to pursue this career, this vocation as a licensed clinical social worker?
Oh, thanks for the question. Actually, I started out teaching, and I lived in Israel for about 6 years and became an English as a second language teacher. And when we came back to the United States, I would have had to do a little bit more schooling to be certified in the United States. And I realized that as I was teaching, I was more drawn to the children in the classroom that were having issues mm-hmm. than I was to the actual teaching of the content in the classroom. So I decided for the same amount of time I'd get into social work. And I fell into my career into aging totally by coincidence. It was a position that I was hired for. I really had no drive to do work with the elderly. Mm-hmm. And what I found, it was one of those things. You fall into something that you absolutely love. I wouldn't have guessed it. And it's been a nice, long career, 30 plus years of working with families and older adults. I love it very much.
What have been some of the highlights along those 30 years that make you say, gosh, I just love doing social work in this area? I love working with families and caring for the aging.
Oh, I think some high points for me, the first 23 years of my career, I was in a role as a director of an adult day program. So I was working with people who had some kind of physical or cognitive setback. They were coming to the day center mm-hmm. so that their family members who were their caregivers had some time off or could work without worrying about how's mom doing, how's dad doing. Mm-hmm. And in those years, I saw what an impact we could have on the quality of not only the older adults, lives, but helping out the caregivers, because if a caregiver doesn't get time off, they don't provide the best care for their family members. So that the older folks coming to the center had mm-hmm. a full day, that meant that the caregiver had a full day also, whether it was to work or to take care of their family. Maybe they had, you know, high school age kids at home still. So that really gave me a lot of excitement in seeing what kind of impact you can have. Mm-hmm. And early, I guess, a number of years after I started in that position, a colleague and I wrote a book. And we wrote a book about how to work with people with dementia, because we saw that in those days, and that was in the 80s, there was a lot of, I don't know, trying to correct people with dementia, trying to remind them that today is Monday, trying to say, no, it's summer, it's not winter, and give them reality. And what we saw was that once someone's memory is so impaired that they can't hold on to that information, you're not helping them by correcting them. So what are the things you can do that elevate them and give them a sense that I'm still able to do things? So writing the book, and then there were a lot of presentations all over the country related to that and trainings that we did. That was a huge part of like the joy that I had in my work, because I really saw that people were hungry for how do you work with folks who have memory loss so that they're not feeling worse and worse about themselves and just focusing on the losses that they're experiencing, which are enormous.
And you can see the educator in your background there as you talk about that and how your eyes light up about sharing with others, helping others, you know, not just working directly with the aging, but helping others who are caregivers mm-hmm. and family members for the aging,
right.
Helping, educating them, equipping them to be the best caregivers that they can be, and,
right.
and to show love and mercy for those, for the aging, and especially in this case of those with dementia. Why is it important for us to have discussions about these tough things, these tough topics, especially as family members are aging?
Well, I think the good news is people are living longer and longer, longer mm-hmm. lives. That's terrific. Sometimes, though, we live longer with more disability. And when there are more years of disability, that then requires family members to step up. If there are family, you know, in the vicinity, or family mm-hmm. members who live out of town need to coordinate with professional caregivers how to support a family member. So a parent may have had a stroke, or a parent may have severe arthritis, or have lost their vision, or have some dementia, but they're still living at home. They're still able to do most of what they're able to do. And adult children often find themselves in the place of wanting to support their parents and not know how. So the fact that their parents are living longer, the fact that it's almost become a new life stage in aging. I'm 61 years old. People in my generation, the boomer generation, we are now caring, and that means attending and worrying about. It's not necessarily hands-on caring, but caring, the responsibility and the worry about how our folks are doing for more years than mm-hmm. we are our children. Okay, so I, know that I'll have 20 some years related to supporting and helping my mom stay as independent as possible. And my children were more or less often, in college by the time mm-hmm. they were 18. So it's a shock when you realize that you've got caregiving at both ends. And very often you find yourselves in the middle.
Sandwich, yeah.
That sandwich generation that we've heard about. So the timing is right to acknowledge the fact that adult children like myself, like, many, many people out there, mm-hmm. 74 million boomers actually, are looking at their parents and trying to figure out a way to step up and give them the guidance and the support that they need to help them stay as independent as possible.
That's an interesting fact. Now that we are living longer, as you said, this is kind of creating a new life stage, but the comparison that as a parent, your years as a caregiver for a child are not as long as your service as a caregiver to your parents.
Right.
When we start getting to those middle years of our lives, when the children, the empty nesters, when the children are
and
off to college.
And you think, there you go, time for me. And it runs up right against the time where mm-hmm. parents may, and they may be healthy up until their mid-80s, late 80s. I mean, I see many older adults who are fully functional and living full lives, you know, into their 80s and often into their 90s. But the reality is in time, there will be some losses, and how those losses affect their ability to live independently is how adult children, you know, are drawn into the thinking about how to support mom or dad.
That is kind of a new thing for this generation. I mean,
yes, in
past generations, we've taken care of aging loved ones, but it hasn't been as long, it seems like.
It hasn't been as long. And I think there's also an enormous wealth and breadth of services that have, you know, popped up. I mean, Lutheran Senior Services is one of the leading providers of service for the elderly. Great reputation, beautiful work, and real deep and broad degree of services. So there's home care, there's personal care, there are levels of care, independent living, assisted living, skilled nursing, you know, hospice, all kinds of ways that you can intervene at different points in a parent's life. And I bet most people, if they were to ask their parents about when their parents, meaning the adult child's grandparents, became somewhat, you know, lost some independence, let's put it that way, how did their parents deal with it? Well, usually it was hospital or nursing home, or come home, live with us. There weren't all those levels of care. And now we're maybe even overwhelmed with how many different types of service people can get and where it's provided, in the home, or does mom prefer to move out of the home? The house is too big. You know, so there weren't as many choices. And what we know about, you know, a broad range of choices, that it complicates our decision making. There have been studies about what happens to people when they're given so many choices. It doesn't give you more power, it lessens you, because, you know, how many different pasta sauces are there in the grocery store?
You just brought it up. You brought it back to food, and that's exactly what I was going to say. When you go to that restaurant, there's one restaurant that we go to that you open up the menu, and it has like 10 pages, and every page is full of different items. And it takes a really long time to... Now it's gotten to the point where we go back to that restaurant, I just know what I like out of the menu. I get the same thing every time. Isn't that sad? But
I'm the same way.
But when we go to the restaurant that has the shorter one-page menu, I usually choose something different each time we go, which is kind of odd. But you're right. When we're given a lot of choices when it comes to these matters, it sometimes makes it more stressful trying to figure out what are the options.
And it not only makes it more stressful, but again, it's usually the 40, 50, 60-year-old adult who is more attuned. You know, they're online, they know how to Google, they know how to search out, you know, get answers to their questions. So they're already dealing with all the different categories of care. Their parents may not be looking at that. And so they're not, what is assisted living? And what does that mean even? And hospice, no, you never do hospice. That means you're going to die. And, you know, their idea and understanding of how these services really support a person is much more limited. And that's probably one of the pitfalls, because those of us who kind of know about the range of services, or know about we're going to plug mom in here or suggest this to dad, overwhelm our parents. And what happens when they're overwhelmed, which is what happens when we get overwhelmed, is a wall goes up.
Sure.
And that's the beginning of the dynamic that I'm often working with families around. How do you bring the wall down so that there's an open conversation, so you're able to kind of really step back, often slow the conversation down, instead of coming up with, I got a solution for this. First, kind of begin to pave the way, like talking to your parents about aging. How you doing? What are you thinking about? If something were to happen, what would you want? You know, how do you see, if you can't live in your house any longer, what do you imagine it looking like? I mean, I imagine coming to your house. Oh, okay, well, that's good. And got to figure that one out. But, you know, sometimes we skip that step. We forget to ask them what they want. And ultimately, it's figuring out how to deliver and support them in what they say they want. Because if you're pushing them into places or into services, or you have to take this, or that is where like a dynamic happens where the parent says, you're not my parent, and the adult child feels like they're put in this role of dictating and an authoritative role. And that really is very easily worked through, But it's very complicated and distressing for families because all of a sudden people are mixed up in terms of their role.
And it's a new role that we as adults, children play as well.
Right.
That we're not used to being the advocate, the one who's helping call the shots for someone else other than our, maybe, you know, for our children if we're parents.
Right.
We're not used to calling the shots for our parents or making decisions on behalf.
Right. Who, you know, told us what to do. And I think some people misinterpret that advocacy. I love that you use that advocacy role as, now I'm parenting my parent, and I do a whole lot of education around, no, you are not parenting your parent.
Mm-hmm.
You're parenting your children. Your children are young, and they're learning, and they're growing, and they're developing, and they're getting stronger and stronger. What is going on with your parents is they have played a role in your life. They have been the authority in your life, and now they are losing ability very slowly, hopefully. But sometimes it's a shock. Sometimes it's a heart attack. Sometimes it's a stroke or a broken hip. And all of a sudden, there you are having to help, you know, coordinate the family to make a decision about, now what are we going to do? But that doesn't make you be parenting your parent.
Right.
And if you have a mindset of parenting your parent, you often talk to your parents like their children, you can better believe that your parents will notice that they're being talked to as if they were a child. You know, now, mom, you have to do this. And that will shoot that wall up so quickly because no one wants to be spoken to as if they're, you know, a kindergartner and needing to be instructed. So adult kids need to learn very simple communication skills and strategies, tools and tips on how to approach these topics so you're not building the wall between your parents, but you're breaking it down.
The feelings that we experience as an adult when that first happens, I think are, well, they're unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents aren't necessarily at that age or aren't at that point. It may or may not be that far down the road, but I remember the first time when one of my parents was hospitalized for a heart condition or heart situation, and I remember having to step in and call some shots and say, no, I want to hear directly from the doctor. I don't want, you know, just to write it off as this. I want to see the reports. We need this information,
right.
Not to be an advocate for my parent, you know, to be able to say, this is not acceptable. This is what I want to hear. This is what I want to know before we make a decision. This is our decision to make, not the doctors of the hospitals. Thank you for the information. But
now we have to process it. Yeah.
And I remember leaving that situation and, you know, just later on going home and just crashing because of all the adrenaline that it took to get through that situation.
Right.
Because it was somewhat of an emergency situation and just having the adrenaline to make it through. And all the questions that went through my mind thinking, oh, I never realized that I would, you know, have to be the advocate for my parent to have to ask these questions and that sort of thing, because mom and dad always did that stuff.
Right.
And now
it
was turned around and they were in that situation and I had to ask the questions on their behalf.
Right.
Not that they were incoherent or anything like that. They certainly could have asked those questions, but
they were in the midst of the trauma.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so actually where you are right now with your parents is the best time. It's before anything is really significantly happening in terms of their independence, to begin to have conversations about, you know, so how do you see, you know, the next 20, 30 years? Do you guys plan on staying in the house? I mean, it's a two-story house. The washer dryer's in the basement. The basement steps don't have a railing. It's pretty steep. Just noticing things and asking them, what are they thinking about it? And if they don't feel like you're starting to press them for an answer, the conversation will probably happen, and then you're more equipped to kind of know what your parents have said. Because in a situation like that, where there was like all of a sudden a heart condition, and you might not have had, you don't know what your father would have wanted. You don't know if your mother wants people in the house caring for, you know, your mother or your father, or they prefer to get that out of the house. Until you have those conversations, you may get home care in the house, and mom's saying, I don't want anybody in the house. I don't want anybody else in my house. I would rather dad be in rehab and get his care there and then come home. So having the conversation before the crisis is probably the number one step before the steps on how you deal with it when you're having to face, so that you're more clearly talking about in the event of, you know, it's and a future event.
Let's complicate this a little bit more.
Okay.
Siblings. Siblings.
Siblings.
You have, as a family, you know, right. It's not, there are certainly some families where there's an only child and they are responsible for making those decisions.
And that's tough too.
But then this adds a dynamic to those conversations.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Bringing everybody together for these conversations, and bringing everybody on the same page.
And, you know, a very interesting and actually enjoyable in the sense of how much impact you can have, an enjoyable part of my work is bringing the siblings together. So very often I'll get a call from someone saying, you know, I think my mom is, you know, maybe has depression or maybe has dementia or, you know, my mom has something and I'd like my mom to come and see you. And I say, great, that's terrific. Bring your mom in. However, I also see the family because you're the ones interfacing with mom every day. So I can support mom, but I can't help you with how you respond to mom tonight when mom doesn't want to, let's say, you know, get ready for bed and you've got to go back home to your house and you want to just get her ready for bed before you go back home. How do you interface? So my work is with the family, the older person and the family. So often coordinating the siblings and having a conversation, you can call it mediation, but that sounds heavier than just a facilitated conversation on what everybody's observations are and what their goals are and trying to come to some consensus around that. And again, it's not what do the kids want? It's what do the parents want and how do the kids meet that? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you may have in your mind's eye how you expect it to look and how you expect it to turn out. And part of my work with adult children is helping them step back from their idea. Maybe that's how they want it in their lives, but putting that onto their parents isn't going to be as effective if their parents don't buy into that concept. So how do you figure out what your parents want and then build the structure underneath that to help your parents, first of all, see that you're working for them, with them, advocating. You're not trying to switch them and, you know, bait and switch. Here, you do this, and then we'll have you do that. But you want to say, if this is what you want, we're going to do everything we can to help you do that. And sometimes siblings are like, you know, you're not doing enough or you're doing too much or I think, you know, they're fine, don't do anything. And so mediating that is really, really powerful because it often kind of resolves some long-term sibling issues, the oldest carrying the responsibility and the youngest resenting it. And so they're just pulled back and say, you decide, you're the oldest. You know, I'm not going to get involved, but the oldest wants everybody involved. So, you know, there's so many different family dynamics that come out of that, but that can ultimately help the parent or parents actualize these next steps, which no one wants. No one wants to have to leave their house. No one wants to go into a nursing home for sure. But if that's what's needed, how do you support them as they go through that?
And how do you come together? You know, I'm blessed in that my sister and I get along very well, we're you know, able to work well together. But I can imagine a family where there are four or five, six children, and all different
four or five, six, and I have clients that are, you know, four siblings, and one is out of the country, and two are in town, and one no one knows where they are, and so we sit there, the two in town come into my office. The one that's out of the country, my laptop is on a chair and we're Skyping with them and we're all together and we have facilitated conversations that really help them pinpoint what the next steps are and to share it. Because sometimes there is a sibling that maybe has resources but doesn't have time. Another sibling has more time but doesn't have the money to, you know, to drive back and forth three times a day. And so sometimes the way a sibling can help is helping offset some of the costs. If they can't be there, maybe they can offset some costs. And the ones who are here who maybe don't have the resources do more hands-on time. But it's sharing it. And that's how siblings move through this process, knowing that everybody's playing some role. Maybe one of the siblings talks to the doctor. Maybe one of the siblings is a doctor. And so they're more equipped to kind of really discern what the doctors are saying or what the healthcare professionals are saying. So everybody can have a role and should have a role for I guess all of the siblings that are involved to feel that they're kind of supported, supporting their folks.
Are there some pitfalls when it comes to dealing with aging parents? Are there pitfalls that we should be aware of, things to avoid?
Yeah, I think the first one, and we mentioned it, is not having had the conversation.
Yeah.
So coming into a situation, maybe what's the scenario? Very common scenario. You took your mom to the grocery store. She drove. Her driving really worried you. And so the next time you come over to your mom, you say, "Mom, this is the deal. You can't drive any longer." You know, coming in and telling them something, telling them to do something, or taking something away, or saying someone's going to be coming into the house 3 days a week to help you before you've even had the conversation about what you're observing, that's a pitfall. But we, and this is something I'll be addressing in these presentations at Lutheran Senior Service Communities, we tend to jump ahead, you know, put the cart before the horse and solve the problem. And the life stage that we are in, the 40, 50, 60-year-old adults, we're in fixing, doing, and we kind of go on that road. Our parents, however, are in another life stage of figuring out how to let go and identifying what they want to hold on to. And that's why letting go of the keys is as much about the car as it is about what this means to me and my independence and how that changes how I feel. So recognizing that everybody is driven by different energies dependent on the life stage that they're in. So I think the number one pitfall is jumping ahead of the horse and beginning to suggest and tell the parent what to do and what needs to happen.
I can see exactly what you're talking about when it comes to the career aged adults, you know, our age, that, you know, those of us who are in our careers, and when a problem comes up, we just want to fix it. We want to solve it. And here's the remedy. Here's the solution. This is what we're going to do. And boom, we think it's fixed. But there's so much more to it. There are several layers to it. You know, like you said, okay, someone's going to come over and assist you at home, you know, help you out at home with the chores at home 3 days a week. Well,
no way. Thanks very much, but I'm just fine. And even if I can't do it the way I used to do it, I'm just fine. Thank you very much. And I don't want, you know, I don't appreciate your telling me what I need. I mean, that's what you would hear very often from a parent.
Now, and if you're saying that to an aging parent, now, if you're saying that to a parent of a toddler, they're like, yes, send them on over. So it really depends on the audience.
Yes.
You know, who you say that to, because.
Yeah. And that's, I guess that's, you know, a throwback to that other part of our conversation, where we're not talking to our children when we're talking to our parents.
Absolutely.
And you have to approach it from a place of honor and respect.
We're talking with Sylvia Nissenboim, a licensed clinical social worker. We've got more to talk about, having those hard conversations, those hard questions, how to talk about that hard stuff with aging family members, aging parents. Stick around for more right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It was the same cause of death for both women, but there were two very different reactions by authorities. Both Joan Rivers and Lakeisha Wilson suffered acute brain injuries because of a lack of oxygen during outpatient surgeries. In the case of Joan Rivers, a famous and rich white woman, the public is clamoring for and will get justice for her avoidable death. However, Lakeisha has been an entirely different story. The poor black woman was killed by a botched late-term abortion. Authorities quickly cleared the abortionist who botched the procedure, and Timothy McGinty, the Cuyahoga County District Attorney, is reluctant to even get involved. Legal abortion is killing and maiming women while killing the children. It's time authorities stop these back-alley-style abortions.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Jesus states in Luke 6:38, "Give and it will be given to you." Will following Jesus make your life better? We'll find out Tuesday on Issues Etc. from Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. We'll also continue Issues Etc. Reformation Week, talking to Dr. Gene Edward Veith about the Lutheran Reformation and the visual arts.
Issues Etc. live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Azil, the LCMS Director of Campus Ministry and LCMSU, inviting all college students and those with an interest in campus ministry to join us for Taboo, the 2015 National LCMS Campus Ministry Conference, this coming January 5th through 7th at St. Louis University in St. Louis. That's right, it's Taboo in the Lou. Find out more at lcms.org/LCMSU.
We live in a brave new world when it comes to infertility medicine, in vitro fertilization, embryo adoption, and assisted reproductive technology. What is the church to do? What comfort can we offer those suffering? LCMS Life Ministry and Concordia Seminary Life Team are sponsoring a free infertility ethics symposium for pastors, seminarians, commission ministers, and parish nurses, November 8th in St. Louis. Spaces limited, lcms.org/life.
Let Worldwide KFUO help you get the word out about your next church, school, or organization event. By including your event in the KFUO datebook, it will be announced on the air throughout the day. Send your event information via email to jennyw@kfuo.org. That's jennyw@kfuo.org. Or call 314-996-1515. Be sure to include date, time, location, and contact information. The KFUO datebook is a public service of listener-supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good conversation going on today, asking those hard questions, talking about the hard questions, how to talk about that hard stuff with aging parents. How do you go about communicating those difficult things, those conversations that we don't always want to have, but we need to have in order to make the later years in life go more smoothly. And so today we're talking with Sylvia Nissenboim, licensed clinical social worker, and giving some presentations very soon with Lutheran Senior Services. So also joining us today in studio, Jane Wilkie, Administrator of Communications for Lutheran Senior Services. Hi, Jane.
Good morning. I did it.
It is morning.
Good morning. It is still morning, isn't it?
It's just not Thursday morning.
Right. I'm so used to being here with Andy at 7:30 on Thursday morning that if this were 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I probably would have looked at you and said, good morning. Well, I am so glad to be here today. I feel privileged to be part of your faith and family, since I'm also a typical contributor to the His Time on Thursday mornings. But I'm particularly honored to be here today, meeting Sylvia in person. Sylvia is going to be leading some free educational seminars that are being brought to the Lutheran Senior Services communities here in the St. Louis area. We, of course, our Christian mission is older adults living life to the fullest. And so that's our mission for when someone moves in to one of our communities that offers all level of care, to our affordable housing, which is the housing with supportive services for people living on limited incomes, or even our in-home services that we bring right to home. All of those are all about living life to the fullest. And so it's easy for us to say, no one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And so we knew that there was a need for the people and families who might have those questions that that they're struggling with in seeing changes in their parents. We were talking about it earlier, or I listened as I was driving here to talk about some of the things Sylvia mentioned. Changes in driving. I mean, so I'm on the way to the grocery store with my mom, and she's driving, and I've noticed some changes. Changes in ability. If that stroke does happen, or an illness happens that that they have a harder time coming up with, now what do we do? So we intentionally put together some seminars that are free to the public, mm-hmm. and they are going to be at 6 of our area locations here at Lutheran Senior Services. They're going to be like one or two a week between now and November 29th. I'll specifically mention the one coming up this week, October 29th. That would be tomorrow evening at Meridian Village in Glen Carbon. And the event starts at 5:30, so 5:30 to 6. You can do hors d'oeuvres, do a little networking. 6 to 7 is the presentation, 7 to 7:30, questions and answers. And so each week, Andy, what I'm going to do on the Thursday morning time is I will mention the upcoming ones for the upcoming week. But if indeed you can't make tomorrow evening over in Illinois, we are going to be having them at Laclede Groves and Richmond Terrace and Merrimack Bluffs and the area around here. Probably the easiest for listeners to do to find out where they're where these are located in the times would be to give a call to Jan at 314-262-8272. 314-262-8272. Talk to Jan, ask about the seminars with Sylvia, and she'll be able to give you all the information. But now let's continue the conversation. You didn't come to hear me. We tuned in to hear Sylvia. Sylvia, just to pick up from where we were going before, you and I chatted just a minute ago off the air about the fact that all of us are juggling so many things, that stress becomes a factor. Yeah. Could we kind of move back into some of the things you'll be talking about and addressing in the seminar by mentioning what you said to me even about the stress?
Right. What we know about, I mean, there's so much study now, you know, brain science study about what is going on in our brains. And at the same time, and maybe this is why we're studying this so much, we are all bombarded throughout the day. And what we know is our primitive brain, the brain that was developing at the time of our hanging out in caves and saber-toothed tigers and that environment, that was all about survival. And when we are stressed, our brains go into survival mode, which means we're either wanting to kill the saber-toothed tiger, run through the saber-toothed tiger, or just you're frozen because you can't think clearly, which, again, when we're stressed, we can't think clearly. And what we know is after that interaction with the saber-toothed tiger is resolved, one way or the other, and the caveman is still alive, they usually sit down in the cave and lean back and take a deep breath. And that breath is what brings our brain back to a place of, I'm fine, I survived, I'm okay, and it brings us to a place of greater clarity. So that breath represents what you probably, many of your listeners already know about deep breathing, breathing and relaxation, whether it's meditation. If that sounds too far out, all it is some deep breaths in and blowing the air out brings you to a place of a little bit more calm so that you're able to make the best decision instead of a knee-jerk reaction to something that is causing you to feel like you're not literally, threatened with survival issues.
And you're not literally going to kill the saber-toothed tiger,
But your brain doesn't know the difference.
Well, and one thing that I thought of as you were chatting, too, is that sometimes being equipped with information can lower some of that stress level.
Right,
so one of the things that I would hope our listeners keep in mind for these free educational seminars would be that you don't necessarily need to be in the situation right now where you're noticing these changes.
That's right.
If you are equipped with the information that Sylvia will share on how to communicate, what are some of the options available? What are the pitfalls? Mm-hmm. What should we try to avoid? And what are some tools? So someday, when you start to notice those changes, or someday when that surprise happens, you're better equipped.
Right.
And you maybe don't go into the fight or flight mode as quickly.
That's right. That's right. And along with that, we'll also be talking about the red flag. So what are the things that absolutely are calling to you or someone to step up and get involved? And what are the things that are the, it's not like let's sit back and watch and see how this evolves, but it really means stepping up. And if there really is, there are safety issues with driving, there are issues related to you're realizing that your mother has a full bottle of the medication she's supposed to be taking daily, and it's 2 weeks later and the bottle is still full, and so she says she's taking her medicine every day.
Or it's 2 weeks later and the bottle is half empty.
That's right.
Yes.
So if there are medication issues, if there are physical change issues, if mom's stumbling or her speech is slurring, there's so many different issues that reflect changes that are significant enough for you to say, you know what? I think we need to call the doctor and, I'm concerned about this. And that's one of those things where maybe you didn't have time to talk about what your parents' intentions were, but this is demanding some type of intervention.
Let's talk about the communication between adult children and aging parents, between these generations.
Okay.
Why is it difficult to communicate between two generations?
Well, first of all, when I mentioned, we're all in different life stages. Mm-hmm. So we're driven by different goals and intentions. But secondly, we're grieving. I mean, we're, watching your parents age is not only heartbreaking, it can be the hardest thing you've faced yet. Hopefully everything else in your life has gone pretty smoothly. So you're really facing that mortality issue. And watching your parents age also means I'm aging. And so it's not only the pain of watching your parents lose independence and what that does to them, it's what it's going to mean for you when you begin to experience those changes. So it's grieving losses that we cannot prevent. And how do we intervene? And so the communication is often, I feel so bad for mom that this is happening, that I don't want to talk about it because it just makes us look at it, and she wants to avoid it.
And so do we sometimes then find ourselves in denial.
Absolutely, and that is the first stage of, grief, is you're denying, oh, it's not so bad, or, let's just wait and see, or no, it only happened twice, it didn't happen five times, and telling ourselves and minimizing what we've seen that might really be a reflection of what something that is does need to be addressed is the first stage. The second stage is like anger. Like, why is this happening? And this isn't easy. I don't have time right now to handle this.
And I don't know, and I shouldn't have
to. So there's all these different portions of how different people at different points in their lives deal with grief that interferes mm-hmm. with this conversation that we're trying to have with our parents. Additionally, that jumping ahead of the horse kind of problem, what we need to know, and the pitfall is going too quickly. So slow it down. Get off trying to suggest and just get curious. That is like the first step. So tell me, how do you feel about your friend just moved into assisted living? How do you think she's going to do? Not so that in that moment you're mm-hmm. having a conversation with your mom about assisted living, but you're beginning to gather, you know, if your mom says, oh, she's going to be great. She'll have her meals and everything's going to be all set up for her. So my friend's going to be, you know, happy pappy. It's all going to work. On the other hand, she can say, that's the last thing I would want, mm-hmm. you know, so you're just gathering information on the things that your parents may be saying about those levels of care or services that at some point you may need to be talking about, but you know how to couch it when you know how they feel about it.
Well, and isn't that a piece too, that whole idea of active listening?
Yes.
I heard recently the phrase, it's out of one of the effective books by Covey, something about most people listen to respond instead of listening to understand. I think it's supposed to go listen first to understand or something like that, then to be understood. But so I'm thinking about it from that standpoint that if we're just gathering information and starting to listen, maybe there's also that point where there's that bridge, that I statement, I understand
yeah,
how
I
you're
feeling.
I hear that you're mm-hmm. feeling very blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so those are all really good skills. Are you going to talk about some of how to build those skills?
I'm absolutely going to talk about it. That's really the heart and soul of what these presentations are about. So people come away with a couple of small shifts in how they say or what they say that put them on the side of their parent as opposed to on mm-hmm. the other side of the wall from their parent. So it's getting curious. It's saying, oh, so I hear you saying that, you know, these services are great, or I hear you saying that that's the last thing you would want. Huh, okay. You know, period. And that you don't have to do anything with that right then. But it's also about saying, I can see, you know, I hear in your voice that you have a lot of feeling about it. So it's connecting with them and being on their side so that they don't feel, you know, threatened. I mean, a thing that my mom and I joke about, a wonderful mom, great mom, who's 90 years old and still living quite independently with some supports, but she's an amazing woman. Love her very, very much. And I'm honored to be in town and be around her. And we often joke that, oh my gosh, I think I just forgot it. So I'm sorry. It's okay. I'll come back to that.
That's okay. That's okay. I am so glad to hear that happens to someone as skilled as you. So you often joke
about?
Well, we're talking about how you say the I statements to people and how you just listened and that you've got strong feelings about this, but I'm not trying to push you in.
Right.
And so we'll get back to that as soon as Sylvia reaches back out to
that. Okay. That's okay. When you were talking about talking with your parents and, you know, bringing up the point, like, for example, talking with your mom or whoever and saying, your friend just moved into assisted living. What mm-hmm. do you think about that? And I could just picture having this conversation with my grandmother, my mother probably the same way. You know, someone having this conversation with my grandmother and saying, you know, your friends are moving into assisted living. What do you think about that? My grandmother would say, oh, well, they're old.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not.
Right.
And she's the same age.
Right. Absolutely. When I was directing the adult daycare programs and, you know, again, they're not for independent adults or for people who have had some kind of setback. 100% of the time, you have a 90-year-old coming in to see the program. Well, those are old people. I don't want to, you know, and I think we'll probably be just like that. But until those people become friends, they look like not me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not who I hang out with, those people. So we always would say to people, if you think your mom needs some support and you're trying to help her stay at home, but she can't be home alone and she'd get meals and activities and, you know, the whole story about adult day and what that can give, commit to like 2 weeks, meaning she'll come 2 days a week for a couple weeks, because it's only after a couple visits that the person begins to kind of know who's sitting at the table with them.
Sure.
And that's when they know that they're comfortable and they like it. But that first moment walking into a room has to be, you know, a very overwhelming, scary, you know, prospect. So that's really with any service. You have to give it a little bit of time, because usually the workers, the professionals that work in all of these facilities or services, they are so skilled in connecting that it's less about the service and more about the relationship. Then the older adult is much more comfortable having people come in, because I love, you know, I love when Sally comes over. I love when Angie shows up. So it's about building a relationship and less about the service. And the service speaks to the person's lost ability. So you're wanting to kind of take the spotlight off of what you need to what you're going to get and the support that you're going to get from that.
So I just have one more question.
Sure.
And that was, if I'm a listener right now and I'm thinking to myself, you know, let's just let sleeping dogs lie. It's not a problem right now. I'm not seeing any of these issues. Is there something you would say to them about how this sort of equipping of themselves will in turn improve the relationship with their parents down the line?
Sure. Because like Andy and I were saying at the very beginning of the hour, having the conversations with your parents when there isn't anything going on is a much better time to have it. When the stress goes up, people are much more reactive. So you're arming yourselves. I mean, even if it's, you know, 5-10 years down the road, your parents are still playing golf and they're running around and you can't even imagine a setback. Having this information is like, just put it in the file cabinet and know that you'll be able to draw upon it when and if. I mean, you know, sometimes that it doesn't become an issue, but you're arming yourself at a time where the stress is lower and the issue isn't, do we make a decision today about where we're having to transfer dad? And so it really, it gives you room to breathe and to, you know what? And the other thing is, sometimes some of the issues, let's say, you know, have your parents done their advance directives? Do you know what they want at end of life? Do helps you prepare for your own aging, and we go to the lawyer together. I'll take care of my will when you update your, you know, paperwork. So
even
it
that,
helps us prepare
well,
ourselves.
And even having those conversations now also about equipping them to have the conversation about, have they ever talked about with their parents? Do they even have that gravestone? Do they have wishes for how they might face end of life? Those are all the kind of things, they're very hard conversations to have. So you're talking through some communication tips will make some of those conversations happen. I just know so many people that didn't have those conversations.
And then find themselves.
And then find themselves in the middle of that situation, or even couples themselves. So a mom and a dad that may be facing in their late 80s going to into their 90s, they haven't even had that conversation with
each other.
And so you, as that that child, might be able to broker that conversation that they may need.
This is really all about the, more so about the communication rather than the actual final decisions that are made in that. It's learning how to communicate so that those decisions can be made and can be done faithfully and lovingly and out of love and concern for one another. Let's talk about where these events are again. I know we've got just a little bit of time.
And if I could then, if we've got the time, I'll just give the date and the location.
Great.
So in case somebody is interested and can't come tomorrow evening, October 29, 5:30 p.m., Meridian Village Senior Living Community, Glen Carbon. November 3rd, 5:30 p.m., Laclede Groves Senior Living Community in Webster Groves. November 5th, 5:30 p.m., Richmond Terrace Assisted Living in Richmond Heights. November 17th, 5:30 p.m., Merrimack Bluffs in Baldwin. November 19th, 5:30 p.m., Breeze Park in St. Charles, and November 20th, 5:30 p.m., Hidden Lake in North St. Louis County. So all of those, you can get more information, have this repeated, get more information by calling 314-262-8272.
Very good. Well, those are all coming up very soon. We'll provide a link as well to Sylvia's information and Lutheran Senior Services as well with the archive of today's program. Sylvia, are you primarily here in the St. Louis area? Do you work outside of the St. Louis area
yes.
as well?
I'm here in St. Louis. If anybody has any questions or would like to just do a phone consult with me, my number is 314-477-3144. I work over the phone as well. So mm-hmm. I work with people who are, you know, out of town and out of the country. And I'm happy to help you kind of think through what some next steps might be if you're beginning to kind of put some of these plans in place.
Sure. As you mentioned earlier, families can have a session, including Skype, you know. So
yes.
if you've got family members out of town, you can include them in the conversations. Great conversation today. And certainly check out these events coming up with Lutheran Senior Services, free workshops, free lectures, so that you can find out more. Our guest today, Sylvia Nissenboim, licensed clinical social worker. Thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
Thank you very much.
And Jane Wilkie, Administrator of Communications at Lutheran Senior Services. Jane, great to talk with you again.
Always a pleasure.
More great programming coming up right here on Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.